Blog Talk Radio.
Hey folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. I'm just trying to get Tony connected, Tony the Tornado, and we'll start the show. We have no guest tonight. We're going solo. It's going to have a good discussion about boxing, MMA, and a little bit of wrestling thrown in, probably. There's Tony. Tornado. Alrighty, we're live. We got no guest tonight. We're flying solo. So
that's okay. I mean, we always do a lot of good stuff, even without a guest. I do have a lot to talk about tonight. I don't know if you're expecting this or not, but I'm going to talk about poor officiating.
I didn't think you'd be expecting that, but
that is something we're going to touch base on. Poor officiating.
Then also,
the day after I get my Ring magazine, I always have a lot of things to talk about. And yesterday I got a Ring magazine.
All right.
Henceforth, I have a lot of things to talk about.
I was going to try to get Richard Steele on this week, but I was thinking
you know what I was going to say, Rich? I was going to say that was a low blow. Then I thought about last week's fight.
They've actually said now they're going to have a mandatory rematch.
Immediate rematch. I was reading that tonight. Well, for most of you who don't know what we're talking about, and if you're a boxing fan and you don't know, you must have been in a cave for the last 6 days. Living under a rock, exactly. Even a caveman saw the fight, you know. Last week was the finals of the Showtime Bantamweight tournament between two very accomplished fighters, Abner Mares and Joseph Abetko. Like I said, two very top-of-the-line fighters. I didn't get to see the whole fight until the very end. I was at the Phillies game that night. And I literally got back to my friend's house right as they were announcing the decision and they were doing the post-fight interviews. And so it's like, whoa. Like, so you see, and you're like, man, what the hell happened? And then you see the replays, and you're like, you got to be kidding me. So a fight that was a majority decision, and for a lot of you people, I mean, I'm going to insult most of my boxing fans here, but for, you know, some of the people that are not followers, the decision was where one calls the fight a draw and two judges favor one fighter. So just say you had Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield fighting, one judge calls it a draw, you know, 114-114, two judges get the Holyfield wins the majority decision. Split decision, obviously, is when two judges go for one fighter, the defending judge goes for the other fighter. So one judge had it 113-113, calling it a draw. The other two judges had it for Mares. Now Mares, a very good fighter, and he's overall a good quality gentleman. Landed a lot of low blows in that fight, like 25, 26 in all. Was never really punished for it, and the one knockdown that was credited was like, I mean, he hit the guy clear under the belt. And it wasn't like that Amir Khan Zab Judah fight either, where it was like right on the belt line. This was way below the belt. The referee had a clear view of it. Abetko turns the other way to go down, and they go and calls it a knockdown. So there's a 2-point swing right there. If you give Mares a 10-8 round, instead of potentially being a penalty point. Obviously a big swing there in a fight that was decided by only 1 or 2 points on the judges' scorecards.
Yeah, Yeah, I was trying to think. I don't want to go out on a limb and say it was definite, but I'm pretty sure that that referee, Russell Mora, was at least one of the fights at the Carlton where there was some controversy. And the very last one that I went to, I even wrote it into the article that a guy got hit right on the belt line. A photographer came up and showed me the picture, and he got called for a low blow. So sometimes it's like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. But from what I heard, there was like 7 different low blows in this fight, and a ton of warnings, but no points taken off whatsoever.
Right.
And I've seen it happen where, you know, it wasn't a low blow and the guy got it called, and the crowd just goes nuts, you know, on these referees. And so I kind of feel for them in that respect because I've seen what they go through. But at the same time, you know, that's not borderline. I mean, the ref was even looking at the...
He was looking right at it.
And trying to say that, oh, well, you know, it's a spur of the moment thing. They don't know. That's on the belt line. I got to make the call. That's pretty far-fetched to me. But what can you do? All you can do is have another rematch, and it's kind of unfortunate because that whole series, you know, this bantamweight tournament has been dragging on forever because of one issue or another.
Yeah, I remember when I think Becco had to like miss some of the timing because he was sick or something. I don't really remember the full story, but yeah, I think he had like some like mono or the flu or something. So. But no, it's a shame because they've all been good fights. You know, they've all been, you know, top-tier guys, and every fight's been competitive. You know, whether it's been Victor Arcinian, you know, we have Mares in there, Joseph Rebecca in there. I mean, all good fights. And
when you have someone come out and say there has to be a mandatory rematch, it's kind of puzzling to me that they wouldn't just go ahead and call it a no contest because of that controversy.
Well, that's hard to say. I mean, that's hard to say, to call it a no contest like that. You know, I mean, the decision was bad, yes, and the refereeing was bad, but to the point of that, you can't call it a no contest. I mean, then you look at every bad decision in history or every controversial fight in history. Actually, cause just as I was saying when we got on the air, I was reading my Ring magazine that I just got yesterday, and they were talking about, you know, 10 or 20 of the greatest welterweight upsets of all time, which is something I'm going to get to later. But one of them was a fight back, and I remember watching it, I think it was late 80s, early 90s, between Marlon Starling, who was a welterweight champion, fighting a guy by the name of Thomas Molinares, and Molinares hit him a good second or two after the bell, knocked Starling out cold. And originally, they counted Starling out, gave the fight to Molinares. But then that was one that they turned around. They looked at the replay and said, no, that knockout punch was after the bell. They should have disqualified him, but they just called it a no contest. But that was one extreme. But you look at fights in the band with bad decisions. Look at the first Holyfield-Lewis fight. Terrible decision. Everybody knows Lewis won 9 of those 12 rounds. Other fights, there were decisions that you scratch your head and say, huh? Paul Williams at Aritami Larda, for recent memory. You can't just turn around and say, well, we think that was a bad call or a bad decision. Let's just call it a no contest and reverse it. You really can't do that. Sometimes you wish you can, but you really can't.
Right. Well, there was that controversy, and then there was even a little bit of UFC controversy. You know, being one of those guys who knows the ins and outs of science, I could definitely figure out that the one of their big sponsored fighters in what's his name there? Draw a blank. What the hell's going on? Dan Hardy from the UK. This is his fourth loss in a row. And he goes against Chris Lytle, who says before the fight, this UFC Live 5 fight last weekend, Lytle goes out at the
weigh-ins and says, this is going to be my last fight, I'm retiring, that's it. So basically, he went up to Dan Hardy before the fight, and he says, you know, let's make it a good one. This is going to be my last one. So, of course, I even said it to my friend before this fight even went down. I said, you know, he just said that to him because he wants to let it be known that, it's, that they're going to want it to be stand-up, you know. His best game is stand-up, so he's going to basically bait Dan Hardy into a stand-up fight. Sure enough, pretty much all three rounds, it was on the feet slugging. Both guys turned it into a boxing match. And Hardy actually kind of rattled idle a couple times, but just seemed like he was being very cautious and just wasn't really trying to go in for the kill after he got Lytle hurt a few times. At the same time, he had to have that feeling like he needed to win that fight, and he didn't. But anyway, he went off almost all three rounds, went for a takedown in the final minute, and Chris Lytle locked up a guillotine choke and called it a night. And there was controversy on both sides of this one because they gave him fight of the night and submission of the night. Now, submission, I guess I could understand since there was only one other submission, but two guys that both got suspended because of the damage they sustained in their fight were Dwayne Ludwig and Amir Sagala, who went to a decision. And they beat the ever-living crap out of each other. It was a much better fight, way more intense. Both guys put forward way more effort. Lytle goes home with $130,000 in bonuses for his fight. Against a guy who'd lost three in a row. And he loses his fourth in a row, and then what happens? But the Fertittas, Lorenzo Fertitta comes out, and he goes to Twitter right away, and he says, Dan Hardy's not going to be cut. Now, obviously, in the past, when fighters lose and they get cut, who makes the decision, and who makes the call, and who makes the big stink about it? Dana White, right? At this time, Lorenzo Fertitta comes out and makes it known, which just ramps up the controversy level even more because Dan Hardy was not only just a Zions-sponsored fighter and the Fertitta's own Zions, he's also on one of the newest flavors of Zenergy, the fruit punch flavor of their energy drink. And they've got like hundreds of thousands of cans with his face on it. So if he's no longer in the UFC, it doesn't make them look good. So my theory was no matter what happened in this fight, he was not going to get cut. And I figured it would be a little bit more controversial than it was. But the only fighter that I really saw put his neck out and complain was John Howard, which is another guy I actually happened to meet from the Boston area. And he had lost three in a row and they threw him out. And, Fertitta mentioned, I like fighters who war. Well, the war in the MMA or boxing, whatever, just means you put on a good fight. And in all three of John Howard's losses, he put on a hell of a fight, way better than Dan Hardy. So he's got a legitimate beef. And, I always thought that this was going to happen because of the Zions thing. But I'd be really interested to see, how many other fighters get upset about it and complain and, what becomes of it. But even Dan Hardy said after the fight, I'm going to take some time off. I've got to reinvent myself. And he seemed to be really ashamed about the whole thing and surprised that they were going to give him another shot. And the whole take some time off thing makes me wonder, too, because, what did they tell him to say that? So they keep him on the shelf just long enough so when the fight comes along and he loses that, then they'll have all the stuff sold already with his face on it. I don't know. Doesn't make much sense. But his training buddy, too, was making some news after the fight. Big Country Roy Nelson. Supposedly he's already on the way to losing a lot of weight. He used to have to cut weight to get to 265. Now he's hovering around 250 and moving down. And supposedly he's going to be in some real decent shape for his next fight. So we'll keep an eye on that. The big surprise of this UFC Live 5 card, I think, was Ben Henderson, who was a victim of Anthony Pettis' Showtime kick off the cage. He lost. He actually beat Jim Miller, who was just ripping through everybody he faced, and actually kind of made an offhand remark about the WBC guys not having the goods when they merged with the UFC. So Henderson just beat the pulp out of him. It was a unanimous decision, but Miller was close to getting knocked out a few times. And that was a really decent fight, too. That could have been a candidate for fight of the night. Leo got, like I said, $130,000 in bonuses and a Harley Davidson to take home for retirement. So he made out pretty well. And we had Donald Cerrone and Charles Oliveira. It was a pretty good fight. Cerrone, I think, got knocked out of the night for that one, knocking out Charles Oliveira in the first round. Ludwig and Stella was a knockdown, drag-out fight. Jared Hammond and C.B. Dalloway ended in the second by TKO. Hammond won. We had Joseph Benavidez beat Eddie Wineland by decision. Ed Herman beat Kyle Noak by heel hook submission. Ronnie Marks beat Carlos Vemola by decision. Jim Hedges beat Alex Caceres, better known as Bruce Leroy, by submission. Rear naked choke. I think he gets caught with those a lot for some reason. But Cole Miller also won by submission guillotine choke against TJ O'Brien. We had Jacob Volkman versus Danny Castillo. Volkman won by unanimous decision. Funny story about that fight. Volkman came in the ring wearing a Volkman for President t-shirt because he had actually been visited by the Secret Service because he made some comment about health care and said he wanted to fight the president because of his health care. So he decided to joke about it and wear this shirt in the case that said Volkman for president, and then after the fight, he went up and gave one to Joe Rogan at the announcer booth there. It was kind of funny. And then finally, we had Edwin Figueroa versus Jason Reinhardt that ended up at TKO in the second round. Figueroa was the winner of that one. And outside of the results there, the news this week, like I said, there was some suspensions for damages. Then we also had the news kind of broke over the last couple days that the UFC has found a new TV partner. They're going to be on Fox and FX next year. And supposedly right now they're talking about four fights, which doesn't seem all that much compared to what Spike and Versus shared over this last year. It seemed like way more than that. But I don't know if that's going to be expanded or what. The big thing is the market share is going to be much bigger. The ratings are better on Fox than they would be on either Versus or Spike TV. And all the other programming that those guys have, the previews for the fights, the Ultimate Fighter show, all of that's going to either Fox or FX. I think FX is going to be the one that hosts the Ultimate Fighter from now on. And the last season of that starts September 21st with a two-hour special on Spike TV. Last season on Spike, anyway. And they're going to have the two newest weight classes from the WEC. Well, they did have lightweight in the UFC before the WEC merger, but they're going to have lightweight and bantamweight. Or featherweight and bantamweight. One of those two. On the show, there's going to be 16 fights in the opener, and the coaches are going to be Jason Mayhem Miller and Michael Bisping. So, a couple of big time characters. Those two are probably going to make this show interesting for the last go on Spike TV. And it's going to be hard to do worse than the last season because they got the lowest ratings ever for that show with the last season, even with Brock Lesnar and Junior Dos Santos coaching the teams. They also didn't fight to get in the house last time, so I think that made the competition a little less competitive and the action a little slower. So, we'll see what happens, but I like the deal that there's not really hard numbers behind what it cost Fox, but there were reports that the negotiations with the other networks got as high as $90 million a year that the USA will be paid for their programming to be on Fox. So interesting stuff. The Association of Boxing Commissions is condemning the bare knuckle boxing match that we were talking about last week. Bobby Gunn did win against Rich Stewart. Basically, it was held at Fort McDowell Yavapai Nation Casino and Hotel in Arizona on August 5th, and the commission described the contest as being, quote, abhorrent, barbaric, egregious, in contravention of a multitude of federal, state, and tribal boxing laws and regulations, and perhaps criminal. So it'll be interesting to see what they do about this, if anything, but they're saying that it might even be criminal, which would be nothing new for bare-knuckle boxing, because even when it was going on a more regular basis, I know, you know, they were always ready to rip everything apart and run, because it wasn't legal in every state back then. But another interesting thing is Bobby Gunn is now going around saying that he is the official bare-knuckle boxing heavyweight champion, and the title was vacant and last held by John L. Sullivan. I don't know how he...
Always talk about you know, linear champions or whatever, and the man who beat the man who beat the man who beat the man. Obviously, Rocky Marciano was a linear champion, as you know, he knocked out Joe Walcott, who knocked out Ezra Charles, who had beaten Joe Lewis, who had never, you know, really lost his title in the ring. He had retired, then he came back after Charles had won. So Marciano was a linear champion. Nobody ever beat him. Had Patterson, went to Liston. Liston lost to Ali. Ali lost to Frazier, keeping the linear title in. Frazier to Foreman, so on and so forth and so on and so forth. The question is, will Bobby Gunn ever get that match with John L. Sullivan to win that linear title?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, he died in Abington, where he used to live on his farm, John L. Sullivan, so... That was kind of interesting.
John L. There's a lot of good stories about him, man. You know, he would just walk right in the bar and challenge the world.
Yeah.
Said, I'll lick any man in the house.
But, he did.
And you know what I would say to that?
What?
Oh, please don't lick me. That's kind of gross.
Well, anyway, the Association of Boxing Commissions is pissed off, and they're actually talking about referring it to the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Wow.
Any kind of match like that from happening again anywhere in the United States.
To be totally honest, I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of it at all. I'll tell you that, to be honest with you. Because, I mean, look at all of the improvements that the world of boxing has made, with safety and, you know, with, you know, regulations and all that. And you're taking a step back. I mean, you're endangering, you know, the fighters. You're endangering the fighters. You know, and it brings it back to, I mean, more of a primitive level. I'm sure some people would watch it, you know, just to, you know, I mean, get that, you know, macho feel. But, you know, and you know what? I think they did this. I think, in a way, they did this to combat mixed martial arts. Because you look at it like this, you know, a lot of the younger generation, you're finding more young guys saying, no, I'm a mixed martial arts fan now. No, I'm not a boxing fan, mixed martial arts. And I'm like, because it's that, and like I said, no disrespect to the sport at all, but in my eyes, it's like almost like a fast food mentality. You know, you get it real fast. I'm a guy that likes a nice aged prime rib. But a lot of these guys today, they don't have the attention span to sit through a good, you know, 8, 10, or 12-round fight. They want, you know, knock them out, drag them out 30 seconds and done. Kind of sounds like my sex life, but I'm not sure. But that's what, you know, so, like, I think they're doing this to combat mixed martial arts. giving that shock value type of action again. And I don't think it's good for boxing, to be totally honest. I don't think it's good for the guys competing. That's no disrespect to Rich Stewart, who I know personally, or Bobby Gunn, the Celtic Warrior.
Yeah, I don't know. There were some rule changes. It's not like the old time bare knuckle boxing used to be, but it's still pretty brutal. You know, you got bare hands, no gloves. They do allow you to wrap everything but the knuckles in this new form of it. So it's a little different than the old days, but it's definitely still got a barbaric taste to it. So I think they're going to have a tough time. But actually, there was an interview with Bobby Gunn that I just published on the blog earlier. I haven't got a chance to read through it. But he basically said he has the belt, and he's going to defend it next in Dubai. So he's not even going to take any chances with trying to hold another event in the United States. But from what I understand, the Indian reservations are pretty much like out of all United States jurisdictions for crimes. Yeah, so, I mean, for the most part, there's really nothing they could do if they wanted to crack down on to prevent it from happening. You know, because I knew a guy down in Cape Cod who was a Native American, and they basically can skirt most of the laws, even when they're not on a reservation, because of their heritage. He was telling me, like, you know, he can trap and fish for species that are, you know, forbidden for a regular hunter to go after. But because he's Native American and has the privilege, he can pretty much do whatever he wants with that type of stuff. So I don't know if, you know, it's the right idea to try to get the authorities involved and stop it that way. But either way, I think they're just going to try to play it safe and keep it overseas if they continue it. He says he claimed the vacant heavyweight bare knuckle boxing title last held by John L. Sullivan. And he says nobody was sent to the hospital, nobody got injured. There was nothing barbaric about it. You see people getting injured in boxing and MMA every year. All the proper precautions were taken prior to the fight. There were two referees and medical personnel ringside. People don't realize this wasn't a street fight between two people who didn't know what they were doing. It was a strategic and thought-out fight between two professionals, and it showed. And actually, interestingly enough, we had a story come in this week that a British kickboxing champion died in a Muay Thai fight in Sydney, Australia. So it's kind of interesting. We still haven't had a bona fide MMA death. We have had a couple, but you know, there were special circumstances. You know, for the most part, smaller organizations where the deaths happened. There was one in Texas that was really a few days after the fight the guy died. This guy died during the fight. Mark Fowler, 35, collapsed in front of spectators after fighting 5 rounds on Saturday night and failed to regain consciousness. Died on Monday afternoon of head injuries. He was the World Boxing Council Muay Thai lightweight champion for New South Wales. So that's it's the first fight-related death we've had in a while. What else? Kimbo Slice won his debut. I don't know if you saw that.
You posted the video. I watched that. You know what was funny, Rich? Did I or did I not predict it?
I don't know. Did you predict it?
Yeah. Remember I said his first fight or two, he is going to blast the guy out, and I mean smash the guy. And then I said, you know, because it's going to get the hype machine going, you know, and people are going to say, wow, you know, look at that, man. I mean, they got a guy in there that was kind of perfect, you know, and Kimbo came in there like a bulldozer. the guy's entertaining. I'm going to give him that. But wait till he gets in there with a guy that's not going to back straight up, that's going to circle, use angles, and pump a hard jab right into his face. Kimbo came in, his head was kind of down. His head was down. His, you know, he was square up. He was a guy that was there to be hit. My mother could have hit him. But that's the thing. And he's going to make it exciting. But, I mean, you know what a lot of people are going to say? It was reminiscent of a young Mike Tyson. He came out there swinging bombs and, you know, he smashed the guy. Yeah, Tyson did that to a lot of guys when he first started out. And then he also continued it. But Tyson was able to do it because he had very good speed when he was young. And he knew how to move his head and not really get, you know, off balance. I think what you're going to see with Kimbo is that he will, you know, he doesn't have the speed. He doesn't have the footwork. He's not young, so it's going to be hard to teach him an old dog new tricks. So you're going to see him. He's going to win a couple fights against the likes of the opposition that he fought the other night. But once you get to that, I'm not even saying a Klitschko or a David Haye or, you know, a Tomas Adamack or a guy like that. I'm talking about when he gets to a, you know, a boxer that, even a guy like, in fact, another fight I'm going to talk about, Monty Barrett beat David Tua down in New Zealand.
Yes.
But a guy like Monty Barrett would beat Slice and relatively easily.
And there'll be a belt on the line. They could fight for the Asian.
Yeah, there would be a belt on the line. It would be the African American who holds the Asian title, who he beat a New Zealander for.
Yeah.
Or a Samoan, I should say. But that type of thing. You get, you know, Monty Barrett's a very skilled fighter. I think would just obliterate a guy like Kimbo Slice because he knows how to box. Even other guys that are, you know, and I don't want to say mediocre, but guys that are, you know, outside the top 20, not like title contenders, that would, I say, pretty efficiently dispatch of Kimbo Slice. I'm just looking at one of my ring magazines now, just maybe, you know, just let's look at our top 10 heavyweights, okay? Okay. Shit, I pulled up the wrong one. Okay, Vladimir Klitschko. Too tall, you know. Kimbo would come straight in, he'd walk right into that jab. It would be ugly. Vitaly Klitschko, see above. David Haye, yes, made look like an ass in the fight with Vladimir Klitschko. He would come out with something to prove. David Haye, too fast, it's too hard. Wouldn't be competitive. Out here we got Alexander Povetkin. He's not a big puncher. He's a 21-0, 15 knockouts. Not a great puncher, but he's a solid guy. He knows how to box. Got Teddy Atlas training him. Beat some good fighters. Povetkin, walk over. Thomas Adamack, already mentioned. Adamack, you know, tough guy. And Kimbo would come right in, and Adamack up him. You know, just trading with him. Adamack got the faster hands, and, you know, would be a knockout with pounds. Eddie Chambers, very good boxer. Shadaiel, same thing. Dennis Boydasov, don't know him, but he's 27-0, 22 knockouts. Here's a fight I would want to see. Kimbo Slice versus Nikolai Valuev. That's the one I'd want to see. That's the one I would pay to see. That could headline pay-per-views.
That would have freak show written all over it.
Exactly. That would be, let's say, bring out the clowns, baby.
Yeah. We'd have to have that in a tent. That would be a good
fight.
But, yeah, he won in 17 seconds, and, he definitely knocked the guy out cold. That was,
he knocked the guy out. I mean, he blasted him with an uppercut. I mean, there was no doubt about
it. And it didn't even seem like he had all his weight behind it either, which is interesting. The one thing I worry about with him,
I forget what they were measuring his, like, punching power. They said, but the force of his punches, this is from a guy that's not even really a trained boxer, who really, to be totally honest, does not know how to throw a proper punch. And maybe teaching him would end up hurting him in the long run. the determining guy does not know how to throw a proper punch. And the fourth of his punches, they said, is something like two sumo wrestlers colliding.
Right. Yeah, I don't know what his chances will be against some better guys, but I'm sure that...
I'll tell you what his chances will be. None.
I'm sure that his promoters are going to take it slow and move him up little by little.
Actually, you know what? That's smart. It could be a smart move, but it could also be a pretty dumb move at the same time. For like some of the reasons I just mentioned. Good guy like Kimbell. You got to make the money now. You know, a smart promoter, a Don King, would probably realize once you put this guy in with some, you know, decent competition, not even championship level, but just decent competition, a good boxer is going to box his ears off, wear him out, tire him out, and then knock him out. So, okay, he made that big splash, that big debut, and everybody said, wow. And they might put him, you know, another one or two guys in front of him to get everybody to say wow again, and then try to throw him anywhere with a make the money now, because what they're not going to want is they're not going to want what happened to him to what happened to Mark Gastineau. Gastineau was a guy that the promoters saw a shit ton of money. Former NFL back leader, a charismatic guy, very colorful. He was white. So, they do that. So, they put Gastineau in there, and they're basically paying. Now, I'm not saying that this guy, that Kimbo, and you guys would be paid to take a guy. I'm not saying that. This is Rick Parker at his worst back in the mid-90s or early 90s, paying guys to take guys. But, he put Gastineau in there, got his name seen, wanted to cash in with a big fight with George Foreman. So what did he do? He wanted Jim Anderson to take a guy. This is something we've mentioned many times on our show. Jim Anderson didn't do it. He had a beat and shit at death. No, $10 million purse gone. So they're going to want to know. Hey, once we get Kimbo in there with a guy that's moderately good, that potential purse could be gone. So let's try to get a few wins and cash in on a big fight now, whether it's a Klitschko or anybody that can. You don't want to surprise me? Rich, mark my word right now. Put this date and time on your... Mark it down. August 18th at 8:46 p.m. You know what fight I wouldn't be surprised seeing within the next matter of months? Kimbo's fight versus Guess Hill. And somebody I haven't met.
I don't know.
I'm going to say two names. One guy is... a first ballot Hall of Famer when he's eligible, that being Evander Holyfield.
That's
going to save me. Wouldn't surprise me. You know why? Holyfield's got a name, but he's also vulnerable right now. Holyfield eats Kimbo alive. The other guy is already in the Hall of Fame. How much money
hold against
promoters would throw at Mike Tyson?
He's getting up there in age, too. I think he's...
Who, Tyson?
No, Kimbo.
Kimbo's what, around like 40 years old, 38, 40?
He's in his late 40s, I think.
Okay, maybe he is, I don't know. But, Mike Tyson has got financial problems and IRS problems, and he's, making the hangover to, help pay off some of the bills. Wouldn't a smart promoter say, hey, Mike, we'll set it up as a four-round fight. Well, it'll be easy money.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
It
wouldn't be a bad idea. Throw all that money at Mike. Maybe get it'll be moved. How many pay-per-views do you think that would sell?
Enough.
It would sell a shit ton. Because you look at it this way. Everybody knows Mike Tyson. You got the guys like me that grew up watching. Guys like you that grew up watching Mike Tyson. My father that watched Mike Tyson, Then you got the younger kids that have heard about Mike Tyson the fighter, but no one can hang over. And then you got MMA guys that are big into Kimbo's fight. That's all the shit that's in the shit ton of people you buy.
Yep. Well, another story, kind of mixing boxing and MMA. Nick Diaz, the MMA guy famous for saying that he wanted to go boxing. And then... and is now training with Andre Ward. And turns out those two had a friendship growing up, and they're both getting ready for fights. Andre is very quick and athletic, says Nick Diaz's trainer, Cesar Gracie. GSP is an athletic guy. I don't think he's the best boxer in the world, but he's fast and quick out there. To get used to a guy like Andre Ward, GSP won't really be that big of a threat speed-wise if Nick gets used to Andre, says Cesar. Diaz and Ward have known each other for about 10 years. Back when Ward would visit the Gracie's gym to box, and he and Diaz would spar. The two have worked together many times in the past and are friends, and this is the first time they will train together through an entire game. Ward has a fight scheduled for October 29th. He's going to face Carl Froch in the finals of the Super Six Boxing Classic in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And Diaz is going to face St. Pierre in Vegas. Kind of some interesting news that came across the wire this week. The news that George St. Pierre was training with Freddie Roach, we heard a while back, and I'm pretty sure that he's still using Freddie for his boxing training. And in his last fight with Jake Shields, he kept it mostly on the feet with his boxing, so we're starting to see, you know, the welterweight championship come down to who is better on their feet. So it's going to be an interesting fight with Nick Diaz now training with a boxer full time. Interesting stuff. And we talked about no contests earlier. Christy Martin's back in the news, a female fighter that pretty much kicked off the sport of female boxing at the appearance on HBO. She came out of retirement after being shot by her husband and stabbed, and then she fought an old rival, Dakota Stone, and she suffered a broken right hand, and she stopped to have the fight overturned or made a no contest, and they voted 5-0 in California, the California State Athletic Commission, to uphold the ruling of the fight, that the original ruling. So now Christy has a big bone to pick with them. She says she's never going to fight in California again, which kind of makes me laugh because, I mean, how many fights does she have left in her? And, you know, what kind of audience is she, California going to lose because she's up in arms? But she's going off on a tirade. She's got Attorney Gloria Allred getting on board, calling it paternalism, male chauvinism, and sexism. So that kind of made the news this week. It was her 50th win, so it meant a lot to her, and she wanted it. She says it was stolen from her. That was because of a June 4th fight at the Staples Center. But the thing is, she broke her hand in 9 places. The referee saw her in pain. She turned her back on the fight, and that's when he stopped it. So I don't understand what the big deal is. You know, if you went on in the fight and broke it worse so that you could never fight again, I mean, well, would that be a solution? Don't get it. She's making the news. Some sad news in the MMA world. Sean Tompkins, the guy who used to train Randy Couture, died in Canada. He apparently suffered a heart attack over the last week. He was 37 years old. Passed away in his sleep on Sunday. And the official cause of death isn't known, but I guess his brother-in-law came out and said it was a heart attack. He spent much of his time in Las Vegas. He trained fighters like Sam Stout, Mark Hominick, and John Gunderson. For the veterans, he's trained worked with Vitor Belfort, Boss Rutten, Couture, and Wanderlei Silva. And he had an 0-4 record in his own professional MMA career. But as they say, if you can do, if you can't, coach, right? a great career, and sorry to see him go. Our condolences to the family. Brock Lesnar is back, he says. He had a commercial for one of his sponsors, came out today, and said he's officially back. He feels better than ever. Wants a fight to get back in the mix. And there's rumors going around that he could end up fighting Alistair Overeem, who's now saying that he's willing to sign an exclusive agreement with the UFC. He's back in their good graces. They're negotiating. There's a couple interviews over the last week with him. And he seems to have put all the controversy behind him. He's still a little bit ticked off about his team members being thrown out of the UFC for what turned out to be not true as far as Golden Glory taking money directly from the fighters. I guess one fighter had suggested that it would be better for him tax-wise if he could have them paid instead of him directly. And that's what got Dana White saying that it was all about their management, trying to get every fighter paid that way. But Alistair Overeem is a different story. He's on a pretty much on a big run. He's got titles in Dream Organization, Golden Glory, Strike Force. So he's basically saying because he's going to have to give up all these other, or K1 as well, kickboxing, because he's going to have to give up all these other titles and walk away from all these other leagues where he can fight in any time at this point, then he wants the money. You know, he wants the big money. But not only that, there's talk that he wants a direct title shot. So as soon as they sign him up, they have to give him a title shot, which would probably make things a little bit difficult for the UFC to sign him with all these people waiting in line. And Cain Velasquez being on the sidelines for so long because of his injury, and then Brock Lesnar being out. So we could actually see Brock Lesnar versus Alistair Overeem, and then the winner go for a championship. I wouldn't be surprised if they do something like that. But we don't know yet. There's no official news. Overeem is still out there. He's a free agent. And the original thing, I think, that pissed off the UFC brass was him signing to fight in October. And he said he was on the poster for the Golden Glory Management fight card overseas, but his injuries actually might prevent him from actually fighting on that card. So we could see him wait a while and take a little bit more time off. But that's it on that part for now. Oh yeah, Mr. Hank, Hammer and Hank, on Friday Night Fighters, Indiana.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll definitely be watching that one. Of course, there'll probably be some football games tomorrow too, right? We're gonna have to be flipping some channels.
No, I'm watching my goddamn Eagles right now, and they're pissing me off.
Oh yeah, they're losing already.
They're losing to the Steelers, and I hate the Steelers.
Oh. Well, it was an interesting week for the NFL. I was glad to see the Jets lose. Rex Ryan flipping out. But this week could be a little bit better. They probably have more of the starters staying in a little bit longer. It should get interesting. I don't know if you heard, there was actually a couple fines already for the preseason games for some of the hits on defense already.
Yeah, Tatsuo from Detroit got like leveled for 20,000.
Yeah, and then I didn't even know because I didn't watch the whole Patriots game, but there was a guy in the Patriots game from the Jaguars who got fined the same amount for it on Taylor Price. And, you know, I just wrote an article for my new gig at thievecrossing.com about that. There's actually a lawsuit from the players against the NFL and Riddell, the helmet makers, for there's 75 players signed up, and they're all claiming injuries from damages from concussions and that sort of thing. And just last week, I guess there was this guy, Corwin Brown, who used to be a coach for the Patriots, and he was drafted by them. He got into a standoff with police and shot himself in the torso. I guess he assaulted his wife during the whole thing, and now he's facing all these felonies. He had 10 concussions during his NFL career, and he was trying to keep quiet about it because he didn't want to put shame on the NFL or any of his teams that he played for. It's, I mean, kind of crazy, you know. If you got a problem, you got a problem. I don't understand. A lot of people don't like to blame anybody for their issues, but sometimes it's unavoidable. And I actually did read that there was a study done of 15 guys that had retired from the NFL and died. They had their brain study, and 14 of them had symptoms of encephalo something, basically dementia-like symptoms from their concussions, brain damage. So I think all these measures that they're making, these fines and these rule changes and kickoff changes, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, it's like all these lawsuits against big tobacco, right? And what happens? They don't come out and make a safer cigarette. They just pass the buck to the consumer. So now the consumer has to pay more for cigarettes. And it's still not changing the fact that they hurt people. You know, the sport is dangerous. What are you going to do about it? Don't fine people. Make better helmets. That's what I say.
Yeah, well, I mean, the better helmets you make, I mean, the brain is still going to travel around. I mean, you could literally put a pillow around the guy's head. And, I mean, you could put, like, the greatest helmet in the world, but the thing is, like, when you go down, there's nothing you can put inside of a person's head to keep that brain from hitting up against the, the side of the skull.
Right. It just blows my mind, though, that they find these guys. They're involved in hits that, number one, don't even cause injuries and aren't always malicious, number two. And number three, you know, it just takes away from the game. You know, especially when these guys are getting paid much less than, anybody that's on the offense, usually. Is getting paid the big bucks, the quarterback, the running back. Those guys get the big ticket bucks, and they never see fines for hits. You know, but then you go to the defensive side, the defensive linemen, unless they're huge names, they're getting paid the least in some cases, and they get these big $20,000 fines they got to pay before the first week of the regular season.
You know, and one of the guys was...
He was the second pick in the draft the other year, so he's got a pretty good contract. So I think $20,000 will be able to withstand. But I'll tell you who I think should be fined. Now, first, I'm going to preface it by saying I'm not a big Patriots fan. I never have been. I never will be. I don't like Bill Belichick. I like to kick him in the nuts. But
why don't you tell us how you're saying?
Eli Manning needs to be fined. Even mentioning his own name in the same breath as Tom Brady, I mean, he's lucky enough to he should be fined for having the last name Manning.
Yeah, I did hear that. He said something about being on the same level.
Yeah, he's no Tom Brady. He's no Peyton Manning. So, I mean, his name was Eli Smith. He would have been a fourth-round pick at best and a third stringer. This guy has not been good. He looks like an Oompa Loompa on the field. And he's a whiny crybaby. I was smacking him in the teeth. So, yeah, don't compare yourself to Tom Brady. Don't compare yourself to Manning. Don't compare yourself to Brett Favre. Plus, you want to come to the whining part of it. Don't compare yourself to... don't compare yourself to Alex Smith. Don't compare yourself to Jimmy Clausen. Don't compare yourself to the third-string quarterback that holds the clipboard.
Yeah,
the Patriots
have their backup.
is a damn tragedy because we got garbage. He looks like a dork. And he goes, there's nothing else I can say about him. The stuff is the fact I don't like him.
Not a Patriot, so. Yeah, their backup QBs do much better than Eli's done in a long time. Starting you. Last week. They're actually winning 28-0 already. Patriots. I don't have the game here in Vegas, but I saw it flash across the screen, the score. So that's good news, but tomorrow night, like I said, we got Hank Lundy fighting a big fight against David Diaz. Hold on. I got it open here.
My computer in front of me.
Yeah, I read earlier in the week, I got a press release about the fight, and I guess Diaz had retired and then decided to come back. And there was a story about how his wife knew that was going to happen. She was expecting it.
Was this Colby Adrian?
Yeah.
tell him you know, he doesn't have to be afraid. He can go do it. That Apollo trusts him.
Yep.
Good.
Yeah, so it's actually a pretty star-studded Friday night fights.
Yeah, I love you having the main event.
Let's bring the article up here. We'll go out with that.
I mean, what I'm hoping for, I mean, I've only seen Hank fight once since his loss last summer. I'm just hoping that he learns from some of the mistakes he's making. I like him as a person. I've known him for about 5-6 years now. Obviously, we know a lot of things on sports, you know, training and changing together. I think he's a good skilled fighter. He's got a lot of quickness, a lot of skills. But if you're not Floyd Mayweather, don't do Floyd Mayweather stuff. That's simple. Like I said, I remember guys for years try to emulate or climb Roy Jones. If you're not Roy Jones, don't try to imitate the stuff he does, like punching your hands behind your back and stuff. It's not smart.
What is this guy from Pittsburgh doing? Running for the hell of it?
Well, he's definitely there. Vic's playing like crap. That's great.
Anyway, main event tomorrow night is...
This season sucks anyway, Rich. I remember the one year when the Redskins, when Daniel Snyder first fought the team, he used to pick up the son of a bitch. First fight the team, and he signs all these huge free agents. They played the first preseason game, they run up the score, it was like 48-10, and he beat his chest and everything. Yeah, I think at the end of the season, they were like 4-12.
Well, tomorrow night, the main event is U.S. Olympian Demetrius Andrade, who's 13-0 with 9 knockouts from Providence, Rhode Island. And he's going to be fighting Grady Brewer, guy from Contender.
Step up the competition for Demetrius. So, Grady Brewer obviously showed that he still has something left in his tank.
All right. As we mentioned, it's David Diaz. He's 36-3-1 with 17 knockouts. He's going to be fighting Hammer Hank Lundy, who's 21-1 with 10 knockouts in Philadelphia. And I got to see Hank in person up in Boston, one of his more contentious fights in the past. Between that fight and this one coming up, he had his first loss. It was a tough one. Diaz was born and raised in Chicago, and he was a 1996 U.S. Olympian. He won the WBC title in August 2006 and made one successful defense against Eric Morales a year later. Monday, he's coming off a win against former two-time Venezuelan Patrick Lopez. Venezuelan Olympian, I should say, Patrick Lopez. And that was on April 1st. It was not an April Fool's joke. Montel Ice Griffin's on the undercard. He's 49-8-1, 30 KOs. And obviously he's going for his 50th victory. on this fight against DeAndre Abron, who's 15-9 with 10 KOs from Youngstown. And there's some pretty interesting fights on the undercard, too. Nothing too special. But good fights all around, I think. And we'll talk about the results when they happen next week. We'll be back on. Don't really have much else to go over. Of course, if you want to know the other upcoming boxing matches and MMA fights this weekend, you can go to sheredog.com. The MMA fights and boxrec.com for the boxing stuff. Don't forget to visit our sponsors, Cocaine Energy Drink, drinkcocaine.com, ZionsShop.com, and check out our podcast page, all that stuff. Look at the blog. We got hooked up recently with Bellator Fighting Championships. We've interviewed a bunch of their fighters in the past, so figured I'd reach out to their PR people and get some of their stories up on our site. So look for that in the next couple weeks. I even got a kid on Facebook today who says he writes for a newspaper on MMA and he wants to write for us for free. So I'll be putting some stuff up there. And we're looking to get more original stuff on the website. We're going to transition to a paid option per month. I just got that set up. So look for that in the next week. And order up your subscriptions. We can start paying our writers. Right, Tony?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that does it for me.
One more thing that I'd like to go over before we cut out tonight. I was saying earlier when we first got on the air, I got my new ring light yesterday, which is always very exciting, making me run right to the bathroom so I can read in peace. I was pissed off about two things. One, they didn't have the instructional section with Bernard Hopkins on it, like they always do, and he gives instructions on how to do things the proper way. He's one of the greatest tacticians of all time. So I missed out on that. They also didn't have the fan photos in as well, so I was looking forward to seeing myself again. But that was okay, that's fine, I can look at that. What they did have was a very large preview section on Mayweather Ortiz. When the fight first got signed, I even said to my dad, I'm like, what do you think here, Pop? And he's like, there's no way you can go with Ortiz on that fight. And I'm like, well, a lot of it depends on if Mayweather ages or loses a step or anything, but Ortiz is, tough kid, he's a southpaw. So it showed chronicled all of Mayweather's fights against southpaws. In the fight, he struggled, with especially like bad judo. And then it talked about the five things each fighter would have to do to win. Basically, Mayweather, just be yourself. Avoid getting on the ropes, box, fight your fight, But then it talked about what Ortiz would have to do. I said, thump with your jab. And it's like, when you go in there, just put the pressure on. Guys like, fight the way you're supposed to fight. And a lot of that would be pressure. Avoidia tried to adapt himself too much. And that's why he failed, even though he had spells where he did very well. Mosley tried to force himself to be something that he wasn't. That's why he failed. But Ortiz, you got to do what you do your best and force the fight to the guy. That's what you got to do. But a lot of people saying, this ain't no walkover. And remember, this is a guy stepping in the ring, being Floyd Mayweather. We have learned he's not going to be in the ring for 17 or so months going into fight night. So that's, a pretty big thing right there. That's what makes it interesting. Is he an underdog? Absolutely. But, if he fights his fight, he's a big guy, he's a physical guy. But he's also got, decent quickness. He's not a blazing fast guy like his attitude is, but he's a hell of a lot physically stronger. And Mayweather has shown that he can be hit, he can be hurt. Interesting to see.
Well, I'm going to try to make it out to his open work.
I'm writing a preview on this one, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm going to try to make it out to one of his open workouts when he comes to Vegas before the fight, too. I know that the company that does the credentials is a little iffy about giving out sites like ours credentials, so probably won't be able to get to the actual fight, but I'll definitely take part in the press beforehand. But
can you bring his Uncle Roger some false teeth? And then a dictionary to learn the English language. and if you can somehow, you know, maybe channel the spirit of guys like Eddie Butch, Ray Arcel, the trainer of mine, Jimmy Arthur, another gentleman I know, you know, Raymond Munson, some guys that have long since passed, Charlie Goldman, guys that were just, you know, complete class acts. You could just channel some of their spirit and just give the guy an iota of class. If you one class, he would have 1 ounce of class.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'll do what I can.
Once again, you always have to guess, I'm not a big fan of him. I know that's hard to guess.
All right, well, we're going to call it a night. I'm actually going to try to make it to a screening of the new MMA movie, The Warrior, in here. It's a screening here in Vegas.
The Warrior?
No, The Warrior. It's about two brothers.
Yeah, his real name, you know. He changed his name to Warrior. That's his real name.
Yeah. I believe it.
That's pretty cool. That's a good name.
All right, well, go watch your Steelers get whooped. I mean, your Eagles get whooped by your Steelers.
They're not my Steelers.
The hated Steelers.
Preseason doesn't matter. Still pisses me off, though. And the Steelers are in the rain delay, which means I'm going to stay late watching them and I got to go to work early tomorrow.
Well, you're lucky. You got a good city. The Eagles and the Phillies are going to go far this year. Now, if the 76ers could improve, you'd be all set.
Yeah.
All right, till next week, we will definitely have a guest. We're going to work on trying to get a boxing guest for you since we've deprived you of one for so long.
Yes, I have been deprived. It's been a long time.
And we'll catch up next week on all the results. And till then, adios.
All right, I'll see you next week. Later when I'm out.
Hi.